Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 60, being recorded on the 14th of January, 2015, with special guest, Danny Garber. My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague, Kale Teeter, and our special guest.
Microsoft
guys,
in the
please
Azure
introduce
Paz, Center of Excellence.
Hi, everyone. This is Danny Garber, and I'm manager architect of part of the Azure Center of Excellence, responsible for media services offerings for our customers.
Excellent. And Danny, really thank you for taking the time to join us today. This is the topic that, I'll be honest, we haven't covered a whole lot on any of our shows. We've done almost 60 of them now. I think we've maybe done one show way back when, talked about media services, and you're undoubtedly the resident expert in that area, as far as I know. So it's nice to have you available to talk to our listeners about this. So, Danny, if I were to meet you somewhere down in the hallway, and I would just kind of ask you, hey, you know, what's this media services all about? Like, you know,
Now to kind of quickly answer to your questions, if you and I, we met in the kitchen hall and you asked me, what is the media services? Believe it or not, I think everyone today, and I'm saying everyone, including the kids that have access to any of the widgets such as phones, smartphones, Xbox, or cameras, have, without their knowledge, already used media services. Now, media services not specifically cloud technology. The media services have been around for many, many years. And like I said, if you have one of those gadgets in your possession and you take some quick video of your friends or of your family, you may not be professionally equipped with that. You can use your own smartphones. You essentially produce what we call a content, user content generated, or user generated content. Now, this content on your smartphones is magically, right, is getting formatted or, technically speaking, encoded it into format that you can stream back to yourself or to show your friends. Now, this is all very simple kind of explanations or descriptions of the media services. Now, when we are coming from your family, festivities that you want to kind of memorize the specific event, to our large-scale events such as Olympics games, such as the World Cup, where millions, if not billions, people are trying to watch the same big, large event. And obviously, whatever you think that may need to, in order to produce and stream that video content, you would not be able to run that out of your own box or smartphone or computer. And even some data center, large data centers, are not capable of producing that kind of huge demand of the streaming. For that, you really need to go and think about cloud. So media services in the cloud specific platform on Azure is what we produce or what we provide to our customers, different services that allow them to not only to store the media content, but also to transform in a variety of different formats and stream them back to their devices, whether it's the PCs, phones, Xbox, TV sets, or any other devices that capable of receiving video stream.
Hey, Dan, this is Kale. Yeah, so one question I had about that was on the what you called encoding, which is essentially, you know, making the video so you shoot it in a certain format, or even if it's live, it's in a certain format. And then when someone has a smartphone that, say, it's only a 5-inch screen and it can only accept certain types of video feeds, my question is, does that stuff happen on the fly, like this kind of encoding, or is that something you have to create a job and let it run in the background and it takes a long time to do?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So let's first step back and say, why do we need this encoding? What is that really encoding is? And just to I'm not going to kind of describe all those different processes that are taking place as part of the encoding, but just to give you some idea, the video streams that are received and either, you know, whether it's the live streaming feeds or somebody just decided to put the file, the pre-recorded file, maybe in a format that was originally recorded. It could be MP4, it could be WMV, or it could be any other format that traditionally, you know, AVIs or whatever files we have. Now, the encoding is really required to make that file, that original feeds, whether it's the live streaming or like I said, the files, to be accessible and streamed by on a variety of different devices. Now, this is the problem. Why I'm saying this is a problem? It's a problem because right now, if you look at around the variety of different devices that people use, there's not a standard format that can play on all devices. So because of that, everybody that is working in the media and video encoding industry have to actually have the capability to encode. Now, to your question, can we do it almost on the fly? Can we do it dynamically? The answer is yes, and that's one of the largest and you know, the big showcase features that we have as part of our cloud media services, is that you traditionally, and this is what a lot of customers are still doing when they build their media infrastructures on site, they have to encode a video format from one original format to multiple formats in order to support multiple devices. And so each time they create a new video content, you multiply by a variety of different formats that you need to support, and then you store copies of that files in whatever storage you have. So obviously, when we're talking about gigabytes, terabytes, and sometimes even petabytes of data, the storage that would be required is going to exponentially grow. And that's why we have so many customers are actually asking, how is that can be possibly migrated this whole content into the cloud? Now, cloud is not just to give you the storage that you can exponentially expand to whatever capacity you need. Obviously, we can, you know, offer a variety of different storages that we have and say you can store it, and the storage is cheap, but that wouldn't be it would be less than ideal, and it certainly would be only halfway through making the customer happy. What we do instead, we're saying don't try to save and store all the variety of different versions of the file or stream. You can save the same original file. You can, or we can transcode into what we call a base format, from which we can dynamically, on the fly, to transcode that format to whatever a client requires and supports, whether it's the web browser specific requirements, whether it's HTML5 or Flash or HLS, or it could be any end user devices such as smartphones, iOS, Android, Windows phones, and so on.
Boy, that sounds like it's going to be a fairly CPU-intensive job.
That where we could actually implement almost parallel encoding processes, and we're talking right now about implementing the grid computing where we can actually have a single encoding process to be basically to apply it as the matrix, as almost like a MapReduce type of event, where we can take the same feed and then multiply in multiple clusters and produce encoding. That's something that is common. It's not something that we can say that we have today. But what we have today is the ability to run encoding processes in parallel for multiple streams. And the encoding process is something that can be intensive. That's absolutely right. And there's nothing that you can come up with that will allow you to, on the fly, to encode without any time that will be required to encode. The encoded time takes time. We're accelerating the encoding time significantly. When we first started to build the media services, our typical encoding ratio to the video time length was 1:7, 1:8. So meaning that if you have 1 hour of footage, it will take up to 7-8 hours to encode that video file. Today, we actually have ability to encode to 1:1 or 0.5:1, depending on the actual video footage, because you know every video file may have a different content that would require different types for encoding. But our times are much, much quicker, and we can say that we are in the leads in the market. We're the one of the top leads that can produce quick encoding. So that's been said. Encoding is something that you have to have, and it has to be done either as a part of the live streaming broadcasting process, or if it's a video on demand that you take the file and then you encode into a format that you want to make your master format. Now, the other thing is that transcoding, that's a little different aspect. This is not encoding, and it does not require as much time as encoding. And that's something that we can today do dynamically, processing the video file into format that your client requires. So, for instance, if you have a specific file that you want to distribute it to all your friends, and the friends have some have iPads, some have iPhones, some have Android phones, some have Windows phones, some have Windows 8.1 tablets, and so on. Everyone requires a different type of format to be streamed. Obviously, if you have a tablet, you can say, "Well, I can download it and look it offline, or just." Running on my machine because I have space and I have capacity. When you talk about Windows phones or Android or iOS phones, you don't have that capacity and sometimes you don't even have a bandwidth to download. So different devices require different types of media that you can accept. So what we do today with the Azure Media Services is that we, on the fly, we transcode the video and present with the video footage and the packages that you can immediately see in whatever bandwidth your device accepts and the capacity that you allow to download the specific segment of your video.
Yeah, a question about that. So if I am using my phone, Danny, I start streaming a video that one of my friends uploaded, and let's say I'm in a bad area, right? So I have really bad bandwidth, so very, very poor bandwidth, but I just get a pixelated kind of thing, and it's coming through. I can see it, but it's kind of pixelated. Is it possible that the transcoding thing can actually switch on the fly too? Of like, oh, now I went up the road a little piece, and now my phone has better reception, so I get a clearer picture. Will it do that on the fly? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, it is. It is possible. That's what we call adaptive streaming. So just to give you some perspective, traditionally or historically, I would say a lot of media broadcasters as well as the media providers were only supporting what is called progressive format. Progressive format basically means if I tell you that you use progressive formats, you would probably be blinking at me and say, "I don't know what you're talking about." But if I tell you, have you ever experienced buffering when you try to watch a video and then it starts buffering, shows you percentage or time that it takes until the next segment of video you can see? I think that 99.9% of end users will say, "Oh yeah, of course I know what buffering is." Even my mother-in-law, she is a She's 74 and she's looking at, she's watching a lot of videos today on the computer. She has nothing, you know, she has no knowledge of the media services, of, obviously. But when I ask her, do you know what buffering is? And she says, oh yeah, no, I know what buffering is and I hate that. So that's, progressive download means. It's basically, we send the packages, packets of your video on your machine. And if you have a good bandwidth, then you can actually download and stream that video packets in the time frame that allowed it for your bandwidth. If your bandwidth is bad, not only the pixelation, you're not going to see the video at all. It would be paused, and the buffering you will have to wait until the next 5 or 10 seconds based on the settings of your media player will allow you to download and play. So that's a really bad. And if you have really bad bandwidth, then you probably would even see that video to the end. Now, with the adaptive streaming, this is a completely different technology. We are actually allowed to automatically adapt to the bandwidth that you can receive at a particular moment. And what players are also do, because that's actually coming as part of the player, and many players are support today adaptive streaming, as well as this, essentially the format has to actually have that support, is that depending on your bandwidth, you will receive the quality of the video, or let's say 2 seconds of the quality of the video that we can send to your bandwidth. So let me explain what I mean by quality. For those who know what bitrate means, they will understand there's a multiple bitrates that you can create the video files. For those who don't know what bitrate means, it essentially defines the quality of the video. So for each, think about the way that we produce that adaptive streaming. For each video content, we divide it by small segments, typically vary from 1 to 2 seconds and all the way to 10 seconds for HLS format, which is the Apple proprietary format. Now if once you divided this video content into the small segments, each of that segment then encoded it in a different quality of video content, or in other words, in different bitrates. So the more bitrates you have, the higher quality of your video is. So at the end of the encoding process, you will end up having hundreds, sometimes thousands of different files for each of that 2 seconds or 1 or 2 seconds segment of that video. Why are we doing that? We're doing that is exactly for that reason, so we can send the quality segment that will be smoothly adopted and accepted by your client. That's why you might have heard the term as smooth streaming, which is the same as adaptive streaming, and that's what we typically call the smooth streaming as part of the Microsoft technology, but essentially the same adaptive streaming. This allows us to adapt to your bandwidth on the fly. So you're not going to see buffering anymore. The only caveat is that before we can find the optimum bandwidth or optimum bitrate that we can send to your device, you're going to experience in the first couple of seconds of the video exactly what you said, like a pixelations, because we're trying to send you the highest quality as possible. And then it immediately adapts to whatever bandwidth you can receive, and then we send the quality of that applicable to your bandwidth, and from that moment, your video would be smoothly played on your device. Now, if you will say move from, let's say you started to move to watch your video in the subway, and which your bandwidth is really bad, and then you move out and you went to the place where you have a good Wi-Fi reception, your video quality will change accordingly as well. So we'll automatically adjust the quality of the bitrate that we can receive. And I'm saying we is basically whoever implement that media player applications on your machine, on your device.
So it's on the client side. So like even my phone, it would be in the client of the player that's actually behind the scenes checking that constantly to say, can we do more bandwidth? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. There's two different ways it's typically done. It can be automatically adjusted. So for every buffer that it's still going to be buffer, but a buffer that you're not going to see it. For every buffer of the content that received by the client, it checks the bandwidth and the time that it took to download that to next 2 seconds, and then it'll adjust automatically. Or you can manually select which bitrate you want always receive on that device. So there's a different ways you can control it. But yes, it's done on the client side, and the client side that controls that.
Now, Danny, you've mentioned a couple of times the word live streaming.
Right now, and you want to watch it. So if you tune up to live, let's say, soccer event, and typically you can recognize that as a live event by word live. You know, some broadcasters are putting the live word at the right top corner of your screen just to give you an idea that this is something that is happening right now and it's not recorded. What's the difference does it make in terms of media processing? Well, originally when you have traditionally when you have a files, the files already been pre-encoded in specific format. It could be MP4, which is typically the format that your phone generates when you record something live on your phone, and then you start uploading that. So you already have MP4 file. Or it could be some other format that you upload to YouTube, for instance, and those are files that have already been pre-recorded. For live streaming, you have a raw data. So there is no encoding process that had happened unless the media broadcasters actually use a hardware live encoders. These are big and typically very expensive machines that they connect to the live feeder, which could be a camera or multiple cameras. They send their raw data to the live encoder, and the live encoder start encoding the content immediately on the fly. So once it's encoded, it becomes something that can be distributed and broadcasted to other satellites or to media broadcasters or cable companies and so on. So this is how a traditional, let's say, television works or media broadcasting. So you're sitting in the stadium. There's a live cameras are taking the video footage. That video data raw format. Submitted to typically through fiber optics cables into a media processor center where it's encoded it and then made available for broadcasting. Now, when we talk about cloud and talking about Azure Media Services, we allow today to not only to take the raw data, which wasn't available until a few months ago, we are now capable of receiving the video packets in two different protocols. So we receive in HTTP or HTTPS, and we also receive in the more popular in the media world RTMS protocol formats. So that means that we can take the raw data footage from a variety of different cameras that support either HTTP or RTMS. And then we can encode that live in through the cloud and then make that transition to or transcoding to a variety of different formats that we just discussed for watching on your TVs, on your PCs, smartphones, and so on.
So thinking about the cloud, Danny, you know, the cloud enables people who essentially could be just one person or a small group of people to do, you know, big things, right? Because you can scale to points that you could never do before because you couldn't afford the hardware and the storage and things to do this. So if I was just like as a single person or one person going to do a live stream and let's say I'm expecting, maybe I'm not expecting a lot of people, but maybe a million people show up. What kind of things do you have to plan for, and how is that even possible to leverage Azure Media Services to do that kind of a stream? Obviously, something like the Sochi Olympics, there's a lot of planning and things that go into it, but me just being a single person setting up a live stream and all of a sudden a lot of people show up, what scale to that, and how does that work?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a good question, but I obviously this is not about
Good question.
Platform scalability. I think it's more about do you have a content that will drag a million people to and wanted to come and see your live streaming. So if you're capable of running your own Olympics games, then it's good for you. Otherwise, you really have to come up with some sort of really interesting idea so that people would wanted to watch it. But in terms of technology speaking, the skies are the limit. So if you theoretically, if you want to create a live streaming broadcasting that would scale in the same scale as Olympics, for instance, in Sochi that we had, or World Cup in Rio, I can tell you that you can build that infrastructure, well, build in quotes, because you're really not building. You're setting up your media settings and media accounts on Azure. Mm-hmm. But you can do it in a matter of 10, 15 minutes or even less.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's something that that only the cloud could do, right? I mean, it's that wasn't possible before, so
that's pretty cool.
I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I'll give you some interesting facts. First, when we started to use some media services and Microsoft technology of being able to encode and transcode and then distribute that content, our first big sport event was the Vancouver Olympics in 2010. To set it up, the whole media kind of a data center to, because there wasn't cloud. I mean, the cloud was available, but wasn't available for media. We had, and there was a specific team in Microsoft that spent 14 months, so over the year,
wow,
to build and set up infrastructure to allow Olympics game to be broadcasted to one of I think it was a CBS that were using that to broadcast the video. So that was 2010. Then the next big video distribution was during the Olympics in London 2012. It was limited to some to some degree, it was limited in terms of what we could stream at that time. We couldn't, for instance, we couldn't code live, and we needed to have somebody to actually do that work for us, and we only used some limited capacity to stream already being pre-encoded and pre-transcoded code of videos into different broadcasters. So, but that was a big, I think, step forward from the perspective, and we used for the first time we used actually Azure as a platform to distribute video at the Olympics. Now, come February 2014, where we had the Olympics in Sochi, Winter Olympics, this is the first time where we actually used media service from A to Z. So the whole workflow was actually run on Azure Media Services. We had a few partners that we partnered with to help with some of the advertisement ad roles and the live encoding and also with the CDN as well as the authentications. At the time, we used Adobe as a requirement from NBC Sports. But that was the huge evolutions in terms of media services. So coming from a 14-month of building infrastructure to support Vancouver Olympics in the matter of just 4 years, to set up the whole infrastructure with the beating the world records. As you probably remember, there was the semifinal game, a hockey game between USA and Canada, which dragged 2.1 million of concurrent users watching that game. And that was the record that never been beaten before. And that's something that we were capable of doing that using the Azure Media Services scalable infrastructure. So to set up that infrastructure, it took us less than two months. And no infrastructure, no hardware infrastructure was required at that time. Now, that was beginning of last year, right? Now we're less than a year, and now we can say that if we were asked to do the same thing again, it would take probably a few days to set up the infrastructure as big as it was in Sochi. And I'm saying a few days, it's a very, very conservative, estimate, because typically to set up the channel that can scale almost, you know, unlimitedly, because we can basically add more and more scalable reservation units, so we call to allow you scale and also to provide the CDN. It's not something that would require days. It's probably something that would require maybe a few hours.
We've talked, Danny, in some of our past episodes about storage, you know, inside of Azure, the different types of storage that we have, whether it be relational database or a blob storage. And my question would be, I know that, you know, if people are producing video, let's say it's a training video or something, even if it is high quality, in the raw format when we first record it, let's say it's 10 gig. Right, so it's 10 gig of data that we need to send up there. That's a lot of data, even for a big business now. And to be sending that over the wire, like through our internet connection, even if we had a gig upload, it's going to take some time. And I was wondering, are you able to leverage some of our other technologies, like our import-export service, to kind of ship a drive up there? Does that work with media services?
Yeah, this is a very good question, and we've had these questions every time I especially speak with the largest media broadcasters around the globe, and they ask, okay, we have a big library of video files that we need to, initially we need to generate or upload them into the cloud and then process them so we can make that a part of our library. So I don't know if you've seen or heard about the case study with the Blinbox, which is essentially a video on demand service such as we have Netflix in US and many countries in Central and South America. Blinbox is the similar service that servicing folks in UK and Western Europe. So when the first time the Blinbox decided they want to go with Azure Media Services, they said, we have a library of millions of, not millions, I think it's 100,000 of different video movies and other video footages. How can we move quickly that into the Azure and make it available for our customers? So we used, first of all, there's a couple of problems. First, how to quickly upload into the Azure Blobs, and secondly, how to quickly encode that so it can be added to the library and make that available for secure streaming. So we use the FedEx services, like you know that we use FedEx services not only for media but for any other data that requires, you know, petabytes of data needs to be uploaded. So that was the first step, to take the whole library and brought into our Azure data centers. And then the second step was to run this library in parallel in multiple server grids that I mentioned before in the beginning of this conversation. And the whole process took just a couple of days to process millions of copies of different types of videos. So that's, they were really surprisingly shocked by the quality and by the time that it took to upload the entire library. For other customers that they don't have that huge amount of library, but still have, like you said, 10 gigabyte. You know, 10 gigabyte to upload is going to take some time, and they say, well, we need to do something much faster. What we have today, we have partnered with the company called Aspera. And what Aspera does, they provide this service, Aspera, for upload files into the Azure, which allows you to use the full spectrum of UDP protocol. So instead of uploading in a very limited time that you have for your application, for a network, they take control over the entire protocol, and you can actually take up to 100% of UDP, which allows you to increase the upload time up to 700 times. Depending on depending on your network capacity, but that's the figures that I've seen. So a lot of customers, specifically in media broadcasting industry, they use Spinner today to help them with the quicker upload time. So this is something that is available in Azure Market Space. If somebody is interested to look at that, it's this the add-on that is available as part of our Azure Marketplace.
Wow! Thanks, Danny. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.